Hey, dude, guess what tonight?
What?
Pool party, my house, 8 o'clock.
Pool Party Radio, the podcast where we talk about horchata. I'm your host, Parker, joined as always by co-host Jason Razorblades Frisbee.
I'm an American badass, watch me kick. You can roll with rockers, you can suck my dick. I'm a porno flick, I'm like Amazing Grace. I'm gonna fuck some hoes after I rock this place.
Hey, Parker.
How you doing, Mr. Frisbee?
I'm doing alright, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing pretty good. Yeah, so this is Pool Party Radio. You can find us at poolpartyradio.com and download a bunch of episodes. But mostly you can email us if you agree or disagree with some things we said about a movie you enjoy at poolpartyradio@gmail.com. Also rate us on iTunes and stuff. So now that we've got that unfortunate business out of the way of plugging things, let's kick things off with the segment formerly known as Frisbee Got Mail, but now known as Put Your Fingers in the Air so Frisbee can see where you're at.
Our first email comes from Greg. It's titled Prometheus. And he's addressing our discussion about Prometheus last week. So again, spoiler alerts if you have not seen the movie Prometheus yet. He starts off by saying, I really need to revisit the older Alien movies before I can say more than this, but I remember Alien as being relatively slow in its pace with a smattering of action, a lot of tension next to no time for warming up to the characters. So I think one of our main beefs last week was that we had problems with the characters. Well, at least I had problems with the characters more than anything else. Like, I thought they were kind of ragtag and kind of unprofessional for, like, crack scientists and whatever.
Yeah, my problem with them is that their only means of being characterized was their jobs, you know? Like, the only reason you could tell any of these people apart was because, oh, that's the girl that's in charge, that's the captain, you know, that's the geologist. Like, they had nothing other than their jobs to identify them.
Right. He actually addresses the team in his email, and he's got it organized by... It looks like a couple of points here. The team. It's a crackpot team assembled on an unfathomably rich man's probably secret dying wish, an archaeologist's drawing of conclusions based on a theme in ancient history. This is Bill Gates funding Giorgio A. Tsoukalos from Ancient Aliens to go look for aliens. The people that sign on for a mission that requires 2 years in stasis each way are going to be at best quirky and near the top of their field, but more likely weird, uncharismatic geniuses with a marked lack of common sense. It wasn't NASA sending astronauts, it was probably done in relative or complete secrecy.
Well, Bill Gates funding Giorgio Tsoukalos would be Tsoukalicious.
Yeah, nice shout out. That's...
Yeah, I mean, I get in real life that would be the case where, if all, you know, a bunch of scientists on a spaceship probably would be, you know, weirdo antisocial geniuses and stuff, but they didn't show any of that in the movie. If this was a documentary, I would believe that. But this is a movie where they didn't characterize that enough or have a throwaway line where somebody's like, man, all these scientists sure are weird.
Yeah, see, this is... Right, I mean, I agree with that. But I will... He's bringing up this good point about, like, at least when they're in that... What was it? After the Gale of Stasis, obviously, that's the first time you meet these people. They're in that sort of conference meeting. And it seems like that's the first time they learn about what they're going to be doing, like why they're there, like after the fact, after being in stasis. And I know we talked about that, but yeah, I mean, if this is something done in secrecy, it would probably make sense that they weren't told about it until they were like, you know, light years away or galaxies away from any sort of radio signal or spying capabilities. But I mean, regardless, I still think they're pretty over the top, given all that. I guess, like, what he's bringing up at this point is that we don't really know what Earth is like to convince people like this, these sort of, what is it, uncharismatic geniuses, to go along with something like this. I mean, there's a point brought up on the Badland Girls podcast where they were revisiting the Aliens movies before Prometheus came out. And they talk about Alien Resurrection. And I guess in one of them, like, this was a Joss Whedon film, so there's pretty good emphasis on dialogue to help build characterization for even, like, the environment and, you know, the time and place of things. And I think it's Ron Perlman's character who ends up saying, like, the ship they're on is on this emergency course to go back to Earth. And Ron Perlman exclaims, "Earth? We're going back to that shithole?" And then he's like, he makes another passing comment, like, "God damn Earth." Like, this is supposed to be, maybe this is a time period where Earth kind of sucks. And I guess they might be looking for an excuse to get off of the planet just to make a couple of bucks. Like, probably a hearty sum. Like, we don't know that either, like, what they're making for this.
I don't know. Well, I just watched Alien Resurrection last night. Ron Perlman's character is, like, a real bad dude.
Yeah.
So when he says, "Oh, you know, I would hate to go back to Earth," I was assuming that he would hate to go back to Earth because it's real goody-two-shoes, you know, sort of like the way that Serenity ended up, where, you know, the main planet was real goody-two-shoes and the outer planets were all for hardened Ron Perlman-esque criminals. So I don't...
Right, yeah.
I mean, in order for Earth and, you know, Weyland-Yutani to be sending out billions and billions of ships to capture aliens for Earth, hundreds of years, I would assume that things would have to be pretty well off on Earth, you know, to enable all these space explorations and space colonizations and stuff. You know, if you look at colonization, you know, on Earth, it always happened via the rich countries, you know, like there wasn't like a lot of Madagascar colonization because Madagascar, pretty poor country. It always happened from rich, well-off places. So I always assumed in these movies that Earth was the place to be.
I know, Madagascar seems pretty biologically reinforced. They have all those talking animals and shit. They have a Madagascar 3 out right now. That kind of explains that.
I forgot that Madagascar 3 was alien canon as well.
Well, it's not so much alien canon, but it's kind of like a Island of Dr. Moreau sort of thing. He also goes on to address the helmet removal. Like, we talked about this one for a bit last week. There's a scene where when they get into this, what would you call it? Like, it's a structure that they find on this planet that has, like, breathable air and all this stuff. Like, they can read it on their sensors and, like, "Oh, well, shit, if it's breathable air, let's do this. It's our first day, so let's do this thing." And they take their helmets off, and I think we agree that it was like just the weirdest, like most, not even eccentric, but just chaotic choice to be made by a scientist. But
yeah, you don't see a lot of scientists who are like, "Man, I'm gonna learn how this AIDS virus works by injecting it into my blood.
Give me that AIDS, son. I need to feel this firsthand." But Greg says, "For helmet removal, I might not have been the first to do it, but I would have certainly done it. 2 years away from Earth on a planet with no breathable atmosphere, you walk into a structure that appears to produce breathable air based on an architectural filtration system? Hats off to that, literally." Yeah,
You agree?
I do agree, like, to an extent. I know this movie is trying to really chug along, like, in the time frame that they have. You know, I mean, who knows how much supplies they have to sustain this mission. Like, it might... I mean, we're not really told. Again, this is something that's not really explained about, like, how long they're going to be there, if they have enough supplies to last them a month, or if it's just 2 weeks.
But to go back to the, you know, these people weren't 2 years away from Earth. They were 5 minutes away from Earth because they were in stasis. They got in the ship and then they went into stasis. For them, it was 5 minutes. So they weren't too worried with, "Oh, we finally get breathable air after 2 years." I mean, they've been asleep for 5 minutes. And secondly, these people, you know, as much as we want to debate the science of it and the you know, odd characterization of these scientists taking off their masks and helmets and stuff, like, it was done because when you're doing a movie, you don't want your actors' faces to be covered up. So they had to come up with a quick little cutesy way of getting these helmets off of these actors. Otherwise, you know, they wouldn't be able to convey what little emotion they did convey during these scenes. And that's all it was. It was just, they had a practical problem in the movie with all their characters in a scene wearing things over their faces, and they just needed a silly little way to get out of it, and they found it.
Right. Yeah, I totally agree with that. Like, I mean, there was an idea to have these aliens latching onto faces and going down throats, and you can't do that when you have a helmet on. The movie has a very polarizing effect. I think it's a thing that we can all agree on. Like, you either really enjoy this film or you will just pick it apart. And I think you and I just pick it apart. So, good email though. Good email response from Greg. Thank you for writing in with that, man. That's awesome. Our next email comes from Robo John Brown, co-host looking for numeral four, a revival. So co-host looking for a revival. Thought you should hear it from me first, since your second in commands ain't saying nothing. See attached. Too late for me to co-host Parker. Hallelujah, holla back, Robo John Brown. This is written exactly like the song titles from Prince's Purple Rain, by the way. Like, he uses the letter U instead of the spelled out U, and the number two in place of T-O-O.
Yeah, John Brown, by the way, is our intern, who was gearing up to replace Frisbee when he thought he was leaving the show, but has since said that he is going to stay. So, anyway, enclosed is an MP3, which I will play now. It apparently holds vast secrets.
Tuesday, May 8th.
Why don't you drive over here now and take out my trash?
But you're, like, miles away.
So?
Yeah, okay.
Thursday, May 17th.
What are you wearing?
Do you want me to invoice you for $4.99 per minute?
Oh. You're an expensive date.
Thursday, May 25th.
No, you hang up first.
No, you hang up first.
No, you hang up first.
You hang up first.
No, you hang up first.
You hang up first.
Monday, May 28th.
Did you send me these flowers?
Maybe.
I fucking hate flowers.
Then no. It was Jeremy or Lee. I sent you the chocolates, though.
Oh, okay. That's okay. Good.
Wednesday, June 6th.
So tell me all the things you love about me.
Well, I love your eyes, your lips, your voice, your hair.
So what about my rack?
Wednesday, June 6th.
What are you thinking about right now?
You're right. What about you? What are you thinking about right now?
I'm thinking about how hot I am.
Yeah.
What are you thinking about now?
Well, it's going to be a very long drive to take out that garbage of yours.
Tuesday, June 12th.
Here we go again, where Jeremy wants me to jump on and record stuff for this stupid show.
No, don't do the show today. I mean, we should be doing a show together, right? Like that email? When are we going to do our show? I mean, I don't have to listen to Kid Rock anymore.
All right, I'll tell him I have an appointment or something.
Friday, June 16th.
Yeah, sure, what do you need?
Just someone to walk on so my feet don't touch the ground.
I can do that.
Okay, so that was a very bizarre email that Robo John Brown has sent in, using scandalous methods to ensure his co-hosting spot on this show. What do you have to say? That was, of course, Jason Frisbee and Roxy from the Acid Pop Cult podcast, apparently having a conversation inside of a wind tunnel. What do you have to say for yourself, Frisbee? What's going on here? Explain yourself.
I don't have to say anything right now. This is embarrassing. Robo John Brown's a real asshole. This is terrible. Listen, I was confused and aroused the entire time, and she's a very nice person, but that is all in the past. I don't agree with this sound file coming out. I think it was all private conversations. But Parker, man, she was asking me to do things I don't know anything about. Like, taking out the trash is one thing, but then cooking, like, only wearing an apron around the house. There was nothing, like, no touching or anything like that. She just had me walk around the place with only an apron on. It was really uncomfortable.
With your butt cheeks showing for everyone to see?
Yeah, it was bizarre. Like, she would have parties, and I would have to hand out hors d'oeuvres like it. It was just, it was embarrassing, all right? But it's in the past. I mean, she's in a completely other plane of existence that I can't even comprehend.
So it seems. So I guess things are over between you then. It sounds.
No, we still talk and everything. It's fine.
Your plans for doing a podcast are over then?
Yeah, I don't know what exactly she meant by doing something that was more, how'd you put it? More dangerous, more risque, where we talk about the unspeakable. Turns out I don't know what the unspeakable is. I mean, she has a much clearer idea of what it is. And I don't know how to do much more outside of like holding hands.
I think the unspeakable means that she wants to do a podcast about Adam Green movies.
Oh, is that right? There would be nothing to say about this movie, so.
Those are the things that nobody should ever speak of.
But yeah, this is all in the past. And if you notice, this all happened before we actually got that, that song from the Badland Girls, which their tribute to Pool Party Radio and you and myself gave me renewed hope and vision of what Pool Party can be. So no, I'm not going to be doing another podcast. It's all in the past, man.
That sounds good.
Yeah.
Yes.
And to the next guy who has to take out Roxy's trash, good luck and best wishes. Because you're a braver man than I am.
Yeah, well, I want to ask Robo John Brown, who's here interning. He's shadowing you. He's still interning, despite the fact that there's no room to move up the corporate ladder anymore. John Brown, like, where did you get such a scandalous piece of audio there?
Randolph.
That makes sense.
That doesn't make any sense. I still don't know who Randolph is. Robo John Brown, you're a butthole. You can suck it. That's what you can do. What do you think of that?
I mean, come on, we're not going to battle?
Yeah, of course we're going to battle. You don't have to be so passive-aggressive and shitty about it. Recording phone calls. You're terrible. You're a terrible person. That's a very disorienting groan noise. I don't know if you're exploring yourself sexually at the moment. This is really...
My God.
And now I'm totally aware that you're exploring yourself sexually. You get off on this blackmailing stuff. You're a real jerk. I'm not falling for it. I can admit to it. I know what I've done when I've strayed, sir.
Man, you bummy as hell.
No, I'm not. Besides, I've got...
I think before things escalate, we got to move on. This is a long show. We got to get to the things. The things we have to get to are this week on Junk Food Dinner, which is another podcast I co-host about cult movies and stuff, which just hit 500 likes on Facebook.
Congratulations.
And so we watched Bill Murray in Meatballs this week, and I was watching the movie with the wife, and she was talking about how much she likes Bill Murray and all this, and you know, I said, Bill Murray, you know, whatever. And you know, we got to talking as to why I don't like Bill Murray, and I think it has to do with the fact that I grew up watching old Saturday Night Lives that were on Nick at Night. And I think I just got a bad taste in my mouth early on for Bill Murray because he replaced Chevy Chase on Saturday Night Live, who I fucking love. I loved at the time. I thought Chevy Chase was like way funnier than Bill Murray could ever be on Saturday Night Live. I hated Bill Murray. Like, Bill Murray's big character on Saturday Night Live was that stupid, like, nerdy couple, you know? And I thought that was so stupid. And, so I figured, you know, me and my wife started talking about who was better, Chevy Chase or Bill Murray and stuff, and I figured I'd bring it to the show, and we could discuss, you know, maybe run down their IMDb pages, find out who is funnier, who is better, Bill Murray or Chevy Chase, and you came up with the idea of assigning these guys chuckle points.
Yeah, it's fairly scientific, but I think we can award chuckle points pretty successfully to both candidates. Whoever comes out with the most could be considered the more hilarious of the two.
Yeah, that sounds about fair. Yeah, so, you know, right off the bat here, if we're going to divvy up these chuckle points, the first thing you see when you go to the IMDb for each of these guys is, you know, they got the known for thing where they show you, like, their four biggest movies or best movies or whatever it is. And Chevy Chase has Groundhog Day, or Bill Murray has Groundhog Day, Lost in Translation, Ghostbusters, and The Life Aquatic. Chevy Chase has Caddyshack, which also sort of counts for Bill Murray because Bill Murray was in that movie.
Yeah, it's like half and half screen time. By the way, IFC was playing that movie nonstop this past weekend. It was pretty awful after a while. I know you had to watch it for your own reasons, but I was flipping back to IFC to try to check out what else could be on, because it was kind of like a safe haven for some stuff on TV. And yeah, it was just like constant Caddyshack and Meatballs.
Chibi yeah. also has the first three Vacation movies. So I'm going to go ahead and assign Bill Murray some chuckle points, because his top four movies, I would say, are better than Chevy Chase's top four movies.
Yeah, that's at least like 15 chuckle points.
Also because one of Chevy Chase's movies is a Bill Murray movie, so that counts towards Bill Murray as well.
Okay, so what next then?
Well, I say if we're going to look at both of these guys' first movies, see which is funnier, which gets more chuckle points, we've got Meatballs for Bill Murray against Caddyshack for Chevy Chase. And I guess, as we just said, Caddyshack is sort of a Bill Murray movie, so Bill Murray automatically wins this round, I'm going to say.
Mm-hmm.
Would you agree?
Yeah, I would. And, yeah, you know what? I was actually under the impression that Chevy Chase was hitting a real stride in movie making, like, in the late 70s. Surprisingly, not the case. He doesn't really get started until, like, early 80s.
Yeah. 83 is when Vacation came out.
Yeah, so it's... As far as, like, entering the movie business, yeah, I would give it to Bill Murray again.
Yeah.
So that's, like, another 10 chuckle points.
Mm-hmm. To be fair, though, I think that Chevy Chase is probably funnier in Caddyshack than Bill Murray is.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Bill Murray's kind of dopey slapstick persona has some great lines in it. Like, the Dalai Lama, there's a lot of quotable stuff in that movie as it is. But I think for delivery and kind of comedic charisma, I have to go with Chevy Chase. It was a bit more subtle for me.
Yeah.
That sounds really pretentious, by the way. He was so subtle in Caddyshack. Okay, I sound like a fucking idiot. But anyway, yeah.
We'll get to the pretentious category later.
Okay.
We've just talked about the new stuff. The first stuff. Now to talk about the new stuff. The newest thing that Bill Murray is in is Moonrise Kingdom. The newest thing Chevy Chase is in is Community. Where do you think the points go here, Mr. Frisbee?
Having seen Moonrise Kingdom, he's really good in it. I'm not sure if he's, like, hilarious, but he is very good, that Bill Murray. But as far as, if we're just going to talk about, like, what we laughed at more recently, it'd still probably be, like, Chevy Chase on Community.
Absolutely. Community fucking rules. And...
For now.
Community, as it stands now, rules. It will not rule soon enough. But, yeah, I haven't seen Moonrise Kingdom. I'm an adult man now. I don't think I'll be going to see any more Wes Anderson movies. You know, that's just how it goes. You know, when you get older, you start worrying about, you know, your 401k, and you stop going to see Wes Anderson movies. Or you start acting in them.
Your 401k? Do you have a 401k?
Yeah, I got a lot of things. A man doesn't discuss his finances. Come on, get real. What are you talking about?
That means you don't have a 401k.
Expect me to talk about what political party I'm affiliated with and what church I go to next? Come on, a man doesn't ask these questions.
No, yeah, finance is completely other sect beyond those things. I'm just saying that any person I know who has a 401k, it's one of the first things they tell me. So you either have one or you're just being facetious about it and be like, no, I'm a grown man who... presumptively, would have a 401k. But I'm just asking because I think it's hilarious. I would not have thought that you were the type to have a 401k. I don't see how that relates to liking or viewing Wes Anderson films, but whatevs. It's fine.
I think that once you start caring about 401ks, you got no time at all to care about Wes Anderson films. The magical whimsy contained within.
Oh, you're one of those types. Okay.
What do you mean those types?
The magical whimsy of Wes Anderson films.
He made a movie about a claymation fox. Are you telling me there's no magical whimsy involved in his movies?
Come on. It wasn't a movie about a claymation fox. It was a movie about a Roald Dahl book. But, I mean, tell me this. Like, do you like Charlie and the Chocolate Factory? Or Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, the Gene Wilder one?
It's fine. I don't actively dislike it or like
Did you like it as a kid?
I never saw it as a kid. I saw it after that second Marilyn Manson album came out. Or the first Marilyn Manson.
Right, where he... Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. He has that same outfit on the cover. It's the log flume ride. I mean, it's a movie that I still enjoy today. Like, I'll still watch parts of that movie. And it's just based on a Roald Dahl book.
That's got nothing to do with Wes Anderson. That's like...
Oh, it has everything. I mean, you're talking about The Fantastic Mr. Fox. It has everything to do with that. Because that's all it was. Like, that was not an original story. I mean, he was just taking that book and he scripted a movie out for it.
What about the magical whimsy of the climax of The Life Aquatic?
It's a very specific whimsy that you're talking about.
All claymation animals come out of the woodwork, too. What are they?
A lot of people get shot in that movie, too. Like, Jeff Goldblum gets shot in the chest in that film. There's no magical whimsy to that. There's just Somali pirates.
It's all magical whimsy.
I'm gonna remember that when I get shot. So there's gonna be a point in my life, I'm sure, where somebody's gonna come out and shoot me. I'm like, oh, this is so magical and whimsical.
Well, when you get shot in the chest and live, didn't he live?
Yeah, he ends up living.
Yeah, that's magical whimsy.
I think he's got a definite eye as a director, and you can tell what films are his by the way he directs it. And not in the
makes the same movie over and over.
No, he does not. That's another. Oh, that's no argument.
He's got the same cast in every movie, and it's all about, like, quirky people doing quirky, magical, whimsical things.
Magical. You're thinking of Harry Potter. That's what you're thinking of. The entire Harry Potter series. Like, he's had everybody from Bruce Willis to... Who is it?
He's had everybody from Owen Wilson to Bill Murray. And that's it. Just over and over.
Now, he's... The entire cast of Life Aquatic outside of Bill Murray and Owen Wilson and Angelica Houston were just like, Jeff Goldblum hasn't been in anything else. Anyway, yeah, okay. Discerning point between us. I like Wes Anderson stuff. You do not. That's all we need to really know or care about because we're doing a list between Bill Murray and Chevy Chase here.
I'm not saying I don't like him. I'm just saying there comes a time when you realize that you're too old for it and it's the same thing over and over.
Oh, man. You should probably see Moonrise Kingdom.
The movie.
Like, what else are you going to do? Watch Aliens all over again?
I would hate to watch Aliens all over again.
Then do yourself a favor and watch something else. Just give it a shot. It's a good film, and it's not... I promise you, there's hardly any magical whimsy in it. In fact, there's kids, like, stabbing each other and shooting each other in the film.
Is there an Elliott Smith soundtrack?
No.
Well, that's because Elliott Smith is dead.
Yeah, there's nothing magical or whimsical about stabbing yourself in the heart with a steak knife multiple times.
All right, well, anyway, Community gets the win over.
Do you have a favorite Pierce moment, speaking of Community?
I like when Chang was dressed up as a dark elf and Pierce called him Al Jolson.
Yeah, that was really good.
As for these two actors' voice work, they've both lent their voices to either CGI characters or cartoon characters. Bill Murray has Garfield, of course. And Chevy Chase has the lesser-known Karate Dog.
Karate Dog. Wow. Bill Murray was also in Fantastic Mr. Fox. He did the voice of a mole.
Oh, you don't say. You don't say. What a surprise.
But Chevy Chase, I've not seen the Karate Dog.
I haven't either. But based solely on the fact that Garfield is a lump of shit, and dogs doing karate is awesome, I'm giving the chuckle points to Chevy Chase.
He did the voice in a movie called Dougal. Weird. Yeah, the Karate Dog, it's a live-action dog with a bandana around its head. And there's an English bulldog on the box cover art that has a Nick Fury-esque eye patch over one eye. I'm not sure why a dog would need that, but just for the sake of IMDb, Karate Dog, made in 2004, got a 2.6 rating. And Garfield then got a 4.8. So Garfield's almost, according to IMDb, is almost twice as good as Karate Dog. But I'm guessing that there are no winners in this round. I don't think either person has really achieved anything in voiceover work and cartoon work. But we can go ahead and give this one to Chevy Chase, just because, yeah, I would agree. I'd probably lend myself to watch Karate Dog more than I would Garfield.
If I saw both of them at Blockbuster, I would definitely pick up Karate Dog.
Yeah, if those were your only choices, and if Blockbuster still existed.
Yeah. The next round is the aforementioned pretentious round. Bill Murray, of course, has a great filmography in this category.
Can I pick this one, actually?
Yeah, go ahead. I've got a few written down, but go ahead. What would you suggest for Bill Murray's pretentious movie?
Since we've already exhausted like the Wes Anderson discussion, I'm going to actually go for Broken Flowers from Jim Jarmusch.
Nice.
Like, I really like Jim Jarmusch movies. That should probably come as no surprise to anyone after hearing my defense of Wes Anderson films. But this one kind of takes the cake for me. It did not stick with me at all. And there was stuff in that movie that was either way heavy-handed or I just did not like the style of it or something. But yeah, did not stick. Have you seen this one before?
I think I had to watch some of it when I took a Jim Jarmusch film class.
You took a Jim Jarmusch film class?
Yeah, I stayed for about 3 weeks and then dropped out of it. Me and John Holmes took it together.
Wow, man. I didn't know those classics existed.
Yeah, it was a bad time for me.
Oh, do you have any ideas for the Chevy Chase selection in this category of most pretentious?
I put down not applicable, because he doesn't do movies like that. So the chuckle points go to Chevy Chase. Also for Bill Murray, under the pretentious category, I've got that weird 90s Hamlet that he made with Ethan Hawke. And while I like that movie, because I like Hamlet, 'tis very pretentious.
Very nice of you to say in the Elizabethan manner.
If I could come up with a speech in iambic pentameter that summed it up, I would, but not that talented.
Yeah, I didn't know when we were creating that category whether it just mean like we would have to deduct points for how pretentious they were. But yeah, now I'm going through Chevy Chase's roster here. I'm not really seeing anything that would be even close to pretentious. Just the names alone. Like Zoom, Bad Meat, Vacuums, like his character in that's Mr. Punch. They're not even trying.
Yeah.
He was on The Nanny. I think that kind of sets the tone for all movies. But, you know, even Fran Drescher was in This Is Spinal Tap, so what have you.
Well, it looks like Chevy Chase was in a movie called Under the Rainbow. And the summary is, it begins in a World War II era Los Angeles. So that could be pretentious, but I can't say for sure since I don't know anything about it. But that could lean that way. If we had enough time to watch every single Bill Murray and Chevy Chase movie, that could have gone.
Okay, so for overall, just not having what seems like any sort of pretentious film in his roster, with the exception of this Under the Rainbow?
Yeah.
Which I'm not even finding. Is this really Chevy Chase?
Yeah, it's one of his early things from 1981. And that's just possible. We don't know for sure. We can only speculate.
Or there's even, what is this? Modern Problems. That sounds kind of pretentious.
Oh, it's not. It's a movie about how he gets hit with radioactive waste and then he gets superpowers.
Yeah, I'm looking at the box art and the bottom quote is wacky and off the wall, says, I don't know, probably Gene Shalit or some bullshit. But yeah, again, the cover art for that one is just goofball nonsense. So as long as you're doing chuckle points, he should probably get like 15 chuckle points for just not even trying to be pretentious. God, the 80s were a magical time, right? It just seemed like any plot description could start with, there's some toxic waste that comes into contact with so-and-so.
It was a great time. Screenwriting was so much simpler then. You need to have magical powers? Use radioactive waste.
Now go ahead and do a line. You deserve it. Because you woke up today and did a script.
The next category I have is cameos. Bill Murray, of course, has Zombieland. We can all agree that that's his best cameo, right?
That's a pretty great cameo, yeah.
Chevy Chase has Last Action Hero, apparently. Although, I love Last Action Hero, and I don't remember Chevy Chase even being in it. So I'm giving this firmly to Bill Murray, because his, it's a little more than a cameo, I'd say, but it's still probably like the best cameo.
And he apologizes for Garfield in it, which I find to be hysterical.
Yeah.
Although he goes on to do the Garfield sequel shortly thereafter, I'm pretty certain, right?
Yeah. How embarrassing. Yeah. The next category is noir spoofs. And obviously Bill Murray. Well, not obviously, because this movie stinks and everybody forgot about it. The Man Who Knew Too Little, where Bill Murray plays some sort of spy who has to do wacky sort of things. And, of course, Chevy Chase has Memoirs of the Invisible Man. And probably Fletch, I guess, would probably fit in that category, too. What do you think? What's better here?
You know, I still haven't seen Memoirs of Invisible Man. So I'm not even certain about it. It has a very noirish-looking poster, though. I mean, he's got a fedora on. That's basically a fedora in a suit, which kind of qualifies it for me. But yeah, for Murray, I would have almost said The Razor's Edge, but that's a completely different story. Like, it takes place like when most noir stories would take place, but...
Also, that's not a movie, it's Razor Ramon's finishing move.
So that is also true, okay. But... Yeah.
Well, I'm giving this one to Chevy Chase because Memoirs of the Invisible Man was directed by John Carpenter, who fucking rules. I don't know, it's not the best movie, but I'm a sucker for any Invisible Man movies.
I'm a sucker for most any John Carpenter film, even though I still have not seen Ghosts of Mars.
Oh, yeah, I saw that in the theater. Jason Statham is in there.
Really?
Yep.
That's an early Statham film.
You got that right. He's young and supple.
Okay.
The next category I've got is worst. They're absolute worst films. For Bill Murray, would you like to pick? I've got two written down here. What do you think Bill Murray's worst movie probably is? Well, you're looking. I'll tell you that I have Garfield, of course.
Right. I was going to say Garfield, but what else do you have?
I've also got Osmosis Jones, the movie where Bill Murray has a cold.
Ooh, that's right.
Cartoon Chris Rock has to fight off the bacteria or whatever it is giving him the cold.
Yeah, that might do it, but... Chevy Chase has some pretty bad stinkers, too. Like, even for the movies I have not seen of his, they're pulling in, like, 4.2 ratings.
Yeah, he's got some bad ones. He's got,
Like, even Osmosis Jones got a 6 on IMDb. That's way more than I would have thought.
Yeah, well, Chevy Chase has, Cops and Robbersons.
Yeah, it's a real bad one. I've actually seen that one. That one's kind of crap.
Yeah, I saw it when I was little. He's got Man of the House, which was a Jonathan Taylor Thomas vehicle. JTT, coming at you.
That's a 4.4. That seems pretty bad.
He's also got a movie called America's Most Terrible Things, which seems aptly titled. Orange County, which was a pretty bad movie. A lot of people like it, though. I've got Nothing But Trouble, though, as his worst movie. Because that is fucking awful. Like, that has to be one of the worst movies.
Alright, so being one of the worst movies, I think this one solidly gives Murray an advantage if Chevy Chase has the worst movie.
I think so. And if you were to see Nothing But Trouble, it's unforgettable.
And how bad it is?
Yeah, Chevy Chase and, like, Demi Moore and some other foxy chick and Taylor Negron get arrested by Dan Aykroyd and John Candy. And John Candy also, he plays two characters. He plays a cop or something, and then he also plays that character's sister, which...
no.
Dan Aykroyd plays like a 100-year-old man or something. And then, you know, while they're arrested, you know, Chevy Chase and all these guys, Digital Underground shows up, and they perform a few songs. And then they have to escape.
Okay, now I remember this film. Yeah, Dan Aykroyd as the judge. Yeah, this is a weird, like, from what I remember, it was almost like Texas Chainsaw Massacre, because a lot of the pieces were there, except for Leatherface. But, like, the idea of this very insular and incestuous. Yeah. It's very insular and incestuous appearing, like, for this small town that they interfere with. I've only seen bits and pieces. But the fact that they have Digital Underground in it, that's kind of rad, actually.
Yeah.
That has nothing to do with the talent of Chevy Chase or Bill Murray.
That's true.
But at least the movie they were in, if we're talking about that as far as chuckle points, yeah, it seems like Chevy Chase is trying in some of these cases.
Yeah, I've seen that movie dozens of times, and it gets worse each time I see it.
Yeah, I've yet to sit through it. Judging by both these folks, though, it's like, outside of Bill Murray with Rushmore, well, and Kingpin, and Ed Wood, never mind. Bill Murray had a pretty good decade with the 90s. I think Chevy Chase kind of suffered. But we'll go ahead and give this one to Chevy Chase.
Yeah, I think if we're talking about just the 90s, Bill Murray had it way better than Chevy Chase.
Yeah.
Now for unsung roles, I would say that Bill Murray in the aforementioned Ed Wood, which was very good, favorite of mine, versus Chevy Chase, I think very underrated, Dirty Work, starring Norm Macdonald, the funniest man on earth.
Yeah, Chevy Chase in Dirty Work is actually pretty funny. He plays that doctor with the gambling problem.
Yeah. And he says the phrase, hindsight is always 20/20, and for a long time in like ninth grade, I always told that to anybody who was like telling me like a story that was like sad or something, or who like needed advice about something. That would always be my advice.
Hindsight is always 20/20.
Hindsight, yeah, you know.
Oh, I thought you said hindsight, like it was a play on words for the original phrase or something. Like that's
just the normal phrase. I never heard it before, and I thought it was hilarious.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know though, because Bill Murray was not only in Ed Wood, but he also had that part in Kingpin. We had that ridiculous comb over and just that he had the great reactions to bowling. Like he had the best reactions I've seen to anyone bowling before. Like his hair was sticking straight up and he was on the verge of tears in that ridiculous like Western shirt. It's a pretty goofball role.
Yeah.
These guys might be matched in unsung roles in my book. What do you think? What say you?
Yeah, I'd say that's probably pretty good. As far as unsung roles, you know, he's got, like you said, Kingpin. He was also Bosley in Charlie's Angels, which is probably pretty unsung. But that's, to be fair, though, Charlie's Angels 2 Full Throttle was the superior one, and he was not in that one. He was in Wild Things, which is another horrible movie that I love, that a pretty unsung role, and he was fine in. Another noirish film, too. Could have gone in his noir category.
Hmm.
Yeah, I'm gonna go ahead and make this a tie. Because all the movies that Bill Murray were unsung in probably equal the funniness of one Dirty Work. The next category, we've got two more categories here. We'll try to wrap it up quick. We got a lot of other stuff to talk about. For holiday movies, of course, Bill Murray's Scrooged versus Christmas Vacation.
These are both fantastic films.
That they are. Where would you give the chuckle points, though?
Shit. This one's really hard, because I know that I watch both these films almost every year, but I'm pretty certain that I watch Christmas Vacation every year. Scrooge I watch like every other year. It's great, but it's really heavy at the same time. And a lot of the themes are kind of unrelatable. Like, not everybody has to deal with the problem of being rich. But everybody has to deal with the problems of, like, family and getting together for the holidays. And Chevy Chase captures that pretty well. Especially, like, as this dad figure who just wants everything to go right, like, aesthetically. And just can't seem to not fuck up. So, probably Christmas Vacation. I think that gets Chevy Chase gets the chuckle points.
That's weird, because this one I actually flip-flopped. I've been a Chevy Chase man this whole time, but man, Scrooged is so good.
It is, right? Yeah, this is really difficult. What do you like about Bill Murray and Scrooged, if you know what I'm asking?
Well, I think it's the most Bill Murray-esque role. Usually he like plays like kind of a butthole that's like a butthole for a good, you know? Like a real wisecracking dickhead that's like a good guy. But in this one, he just kind of, you know, gets to let it all hang out and be a dickhead, you know, and be a bad guy dickhead. And I think that makes it a lot funnier.
That is true. Yeah, when you say it's like Bill Murray at his most Bill Murray, I gotta agree with that. Because, like, watching meatballs this past weekend. There's like a Bill Murray marathon for some reason. Probably because Moonrise Kingdom is kind of, I don't know.
Probably, but we talked about Bill Murray on Junk Food Dinner, I would think.
Probably, and we, you know, that has to spearhead it. So IFC was probably listening or something. But yeah, Stripes, Meatballs, you're right. Like, he's this quirky, dickish, but he's quirky and dickish towards authority. Like, even though he joins the army, he still finds ways to sneak around it and tiptoe and get his own way. It's like, what if he was at the top anyway? What happens then? I think that's what you mentioned about Scrooge, is that we actually get to see that. Yeah, this is a really hard choice, this category. I didn't realize that. It never occurred to me that they were both in competition for most memorable Christmas movie, or most funny and interesting Christmas movie.
You can go ahead and mark this one a tie and chuckle points, if you like.
Yeah, let's do that. So, how's that category as well?
This is the final category. This is for twice the chuckle points, let's say.
Okay, yeah. Double chuckle points. This double is, chuckle.
This is each person's best movie. Bill Murray. Now, what would you say Bill Murray's best movie is?
You know, it's weird. I'd probably say Ghostbusters.
Ghostbusters. I have Groundhog Day.
Really? I did not expect you to pick that one.
Oh, it's so good.
I did not even know you liked that film.
And I love it.
Kind of figured it would stay away from, like, all Harold Ramis stuff.
I don't know much about this Harold Ramis you're talking about, but I know that I watched Groundhog Day 100 times growing up. It's one of these movies that, I mean, if it's on TV, no matter what I'm doing, like if I'm on my way out the door to go to work, I stop and I watch the rest of the movie. If I'm on my way to, you know, like if there's been like a horrible car accident, like a family member is dying, but Groundhog Day is coming on, I finish up.
When you said you watched it every day as a kid, I imagine that your Groundhog Day was watching Groundhog Day.
Yeah.
So every day you wake up and watch Groundhog Day.
Technically, I just watched it the once.
You're reliving every day as you watching Groundhog Day.
For Chevy Chase's best movie, I would go with, you know, Vacation, the first Vacation.
That one is quite good, but I think I would actually say Fletch on this one. I really do like Fletch a great deal.
That also works. Or you could even put Community in there.
That's not his movie, though.
Well, it's like his best thing that he's done in his career.
Oh, yeah. That would also be up there.
He's got a lot of options. I think that Bill Murray really only has the one option for best thing he's done. In my book, I think Groundhog Day is miles above. Well, in Life Aquatic, too, I guess. Life Aquatic's way up there.
I know he wasn't like the lead role in Ghostbusters, but that's such a memorable film as it is. Like, I think that both these guys have done a ton of iconic work. Like, they're firmly entrenched in, you know, our pop culture, in pop culture currency. Like, you can bring up Three Amigos, or you can bring up, Rushmore, and still find quotes to draw from it or references to draw from it. But for me, I think Bill Murray actually holds more of that cultural currency, but it's a much more narrow margin than I had previously thought since doing this comparison.
Also, I think I might be swayed in Bill Murray's direction on this too, because I think he has the character I most relate to with his Little Shop of Horrors character that really enjoyed the discomfort of going to the dentist.
Oh, no way. You enjoy that? Oh,
I love it. Yeah, I talked about John Holmes was on the show, and not you, the week I talked about going to the dentist and just having a good time being injected with pain sauce. Yeah, I'm going to give this one to Bill Murray because Groundhog Day rules.
So, tabulating the chuckle points, I'm going to guess that Bill Murray kind of comes out on this, but again, from a very narrow margin.
Maybe. The best, that last category counts for 2 chuckle points, so that could sway these things.
That was twice the chuckle points.
Oh my god, you're not going to believe how I've got this scored.
How many chuckle points are distributed?
I've got a score of 6-6.
Well, looks like we didn't achieve anything with this discussion, except that Bill Murray and Chevy Chase are equally matched. If you were to play a Bill Murray Pokemon card against a Chevy Chase Pokemon card, it would be a stalemate. I'm not sure how Pokemon cards work. I'm just trying to sound young and hip.
You got them tied?
I didn't actually tabulate them. I had wild varying numbers. So I think it's like, yeah. Instead of 6 to 6, I think it's like 45 to 45.
Yeah, I know when we first talked about doing this, I said that we should just use arbitrary, crazy, like, whose line is it anyway numbers. But then I got like real serious about it. And I really wanted to find out who was funnier.
Well, it seems like, you know, through the 80s and 90s, and even today, like, since they're both still active, they're both kind of neck and neck now. I think in the 90s, it most definitely would have been Bill Murray coming out ahead. But in the 80s, I don't know. That probably also been tied.
I think if we're going for right now, I'd probably give it to Chevy Chase, because Community's great. He was apparently in a couple of episodes of Family Guy as Clark Griswold, which sounds funny. Now he's just doing these Wes Anderson movies, and that's it. And Get Smart.
Yeah, and the Garfield movies, that doesn't really help anything either.
So, yeah, I think that Bill Murray really took the lead in the 80s and 90s, or the late 80s and 90s. I think Chevy Chase is catching up now. Ironically, because of his work on Dan Harmon's show, and Dan Harmon hates him. So it's ironic that he's bringing him back to the forefront of funniness.
If we miss something, be sure to email us at poolpartyradio@gmail.com.
Part of the Red Band Network, redbandnetwork.com.
All right, now we've got America's favorite game show. This is a show we've been doing the last couple of weeks. It's called Kevin Listens To. It's about Kevin Moss from Junk Food Dinner. I ask Mr. Frisbee, or I say to Mr. Frisbee the name of a band, and he tells me if Kevin Moss from Junk Food Dinner
drop
listens to that band. Now, of course, last week, there's some controversy. I asked Mr. Frisbee if Kevin Moss listened to the Descendants.
I answered that no, he does not.
And that was the correct answer.
According to Last FM, correct?
Yeah, according to Last FM, and Mr. Frisbee won all the money, 3 times all the money. He won so much money for that answer. But then on our Facebook, Kevin Moss left a picture of him holding a Descendants album that he owns. So quite a bit of controversy, a lot of allegations of us rigging the contest to give Mr. Frisbee the money.
To be fair, though, I've known quite a few vinyl collectors who will buy vinyl just to buy vinyl. Sometimes it just means like you're adding to a collection, like a pog that you would never put in a stack.
I have so many CDs I've never listened to. Now, we're not accusing Kevin Moss of doing that.
No. I mean, knowing Kevin, I'm 99.9% sure he's at least put on a turntable and listened to it one time.
Also, it was the Everything Sucks album, which is fucking great, so I'm sure he's listening to it right now because it rules so hard.
He's probably heard it at some point, yeah.
Yeah, so there was some controversy, and, you know, we were talking about maybe canceling the game show because of, you know, all the accusations and stuff. But I worked it out with Kevin, and he said that we can go ahead and keep doing the show so much as I take all the money, 3 times all the money that you've won so far doing the show, Frisbee, and I give it to him.
No. Why?
Well,
I still haven't seen any of this cash.
I know. I was going to send the check out, and then all this happened, and I had to cross your name out and sign it over to Kevin. So Kevin's got the money.
That's so fucking weak.
Well, we were going to get sued for lying and making things up and saying that he doesn't listen to bands that he does, in fact, listen to.
None of us can afford lawyers. Who are you kidding?
Well, we can't now because we're poor, but Kevin's got all the money. 3 times all the money. He can afford as many lawyers as he wants.
Well, just out of curiosity, how much was 3 times all the money?
I just wrote 3 times all the money on the check, and, I mean, they cashed it. It went through fine. I mean, it was taken out of my bank account, so.
So you're left with negative 3 times all the money?
Well, yeah, I'm left with...
I'm not saying you're in the red. I'm just saying, like, that's the deduction that they took.
Yeah.
Like, here's your update. Minus 3 times all the money. Your current balance is... I don't know what.
It's still a positive balance.
The rest of the money.
Yeah, the rest.
Right?
I had it in there.
Okay. Well, I'm anxious to get my hands on the rest of that money. Okay. I'm in it to win it, though I think this thing is totally rigged.
Yeah. Well, we have also got to clarify, because of our lawyers and the deal that I made with Kevin, that this is all based on Last FM.
Which, to upstand the credibility of this game, I don't cheat at it because I'm really lazy, and there's no way that I would even check Last FM right now.
I pray to God you won't, because then you'd owe Kevin all the money for rigging it yourself.
Now, you don't have to pray to anybody. I'm telling you, like, I'm not going to look at Last FM.
Yeah,
but I don't even use it on my off time.
Yeah, I use it all the time. It's all based on Last.fm. And to be fair, though, everything I've ever listened to in my life has been tabulated by Last.fm. So I find it to be a pretty accurate source, but that's what we're going for. So if it's not on Last.fm, Kevin Moss can no longer, according to our deal, pull out pictures of records he has and show them off. So now, Mr. Frisbee.
Mm-hmm.
According to Last.fm, is Kevin Moss of Junk Food Dinner, junkfooddinner.com, which has 500 likes on Facebook and does not suck. Does Kevin Moss listen to Valiant Thor?
Ooh. No. I'm going to say no.
You're absolutely correct.
That was hard, because I didn't know... Yeah, like, the Descendants one, I was almost positive that he hadn't heard it. They wouldn't listen to it. You know, obviously the record proved me wrong. The Valiant Thor... Like, as we get into newer bands, there's just some bands I don't know. I pretty much stopped exploring music outside of the singer-songwriters that I'm stuck on currently, which would be like Kate Bush, Tom Waits, and David Bowie, and Neil Young. That's about it.
Yeah, so Valiant Thor. Kevin does not listen to them. I think he would really like them, though, to be fair. So maybe this segment will... This game show will turn into things that Kevin should listen to.
Because I should Kevin listen to this? That just becomes entirely subjective. But yeah, I'm willing to win that money, too.
All right, well, you're doing very well on this show. You've yet to get a correct answer. So you will be getting all the money this week. I'll send it out to you just as soon as possible.
Well, I'll be sitting by the mailbox. I always do. So, yeah, hopefully it'll come in.
You won't have to wait very long. It's coming.
I'm looking forward to it.
And now it's time
for the lightning round.
Nora Ephron, screenwriter, has passed on. She's most known for popularizing the romantic genre, romantic comedy genre, with such films like When Harry Met Sally, Sleepless in Seattle, and You've Got Mail.
Yeah, it's sad that she's dead. I'm sure she's a fine lady. But as far as film culture goes, and art as a whole, what a joyous day this is, because she is responsible for spotting the absolute worst genre in movie history, outside of perhaps fake snuff films, in the romantic comedy, and she is just responsible for just the most god-awful crap. I mean, When Harry Met Sally, and You Got Mail, Sleepless in Seattle, just the worst fucking bullshit on earth. Just stuff that's like so cynical and heartless and soulless. I mean, it's designed to make you cry and want ice cream, and it's designed for girls to watch and be like, oh, I wish I had a boyfriend like this, like Tom Hanks and blah. And it's just heartless. Like, there's nothing to it. It's all just formulaic crap. And I'm glad that it'll be ending. This reign of terror is over. What say you, Mr. Frisbee?
I'm not one for romantic comedies either. I was kind of bummed to see, like, that... Well, I really didn't know much about her, to be honest, until her passing, which sucks. I mean, I'm sure anybody could say that's not how they want to go. Like, people are perking up and paying attention once they've died. But yeah, the film list that she's responsible for is nothing that I'm really fond of. I don't know.
Yeah, it's...
I don't know, it's that idea, it's like... I think you and I would probably go more for... You have to kind of depend on yourself. Well, no, I don't want to make that assumption about you or anything. But I would say, like, these films aren't giving any credence to women being powerful and independent. I mean, even that's the thing in When Harry Met Sally. Like, Sally's supposed to be this strong, independent woman. But, I mean, even she eventually caves. She's like, no, I'm going to need Billy Crystal to be truly happy. Or some such, you know.
Yeah, and even the title of that movie is When Harry Met Sally, not When Sally Met Harry. The title itself is a little sexist.
It kind of goes on, like, Sleepless in Seattle, I wasn't really fond of. You've Got Mail, I definitely wasn't fond of. Bewitched, yikes.
Yeah.
The 2005 one. I think I remember Jesse P.S. actually doing a tweet about that this past week. He's like, you guys realize she's responsible for the Bewitched film version, correct?
Yes.
Mixed Nuts was okay, though. I thought that was all right.
With Steve Martin?
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, see, I'm okay with Steve Martin. A lot of people are not. And I can totally understand that. He's kind of tough sometimes.
Yeah.
But yeah, some of this other stuff I'm not really into. Sure. And definitely, I mean, like, definitely popularizing the genre. I mean, if given the choice, I'd watch one of hers over, like, anything that Matthew McConaughey's been in that's considered romantic comedy. Like, I would watch When Harry Met Sally over Failure to Launch. But well, that's about the extent of it.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like she does the best romantic comedies, but like I said earlier, like, that's like saying, oh, you know, August Underground has the best fake snuff films.
Also, yeah.
She also wrote Michael, which is the film where John Travolta plays an angel.
No, yeah, that's not a good one either.
And she,
I mean, I wasn't fond of that one.
Yeah, she's also given the world the career of Meg Ryan, so that's pretty bad.
Yeah.
And Meg Ryan looks like a fucking monster now.
Well, most people look like a monster these days anyway.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. She looks like an old porn star grandma with a plastic melty face. But yeah, so this is fine. How about it, Nora Ephron? You're in heaven now making shitty, shitty movies.
With the angel John Travolta.
Yeah, and actually,
showing you around.
And ironically, her death is probably the first thing she's done in her career that elicited real, genuine emotion from people, rather than just fake, manufactured, paint-by-numbers crap that she did.
Well, next up on the lightning round, Houston's strip clubs hit by new poll tax. The city of Houston is turning to an unusual source to help fund rape investigations. Those being strip clubs. The city council passed an ordinance Wednesday that requires strip clubs to pay a $5 per visitor fee to help pay for the analysis of biological evidence collected from rape victims in hopes of identifying their attackers.
This is
pretty wild. I didn't realize this was a... How are these connected?
Exactly. How are these connected? At least, you know, when people do that fake fucking garbage where they, like, go, oh, you know, we'll tax your cigarettes to pay for lung cancer research. Like, that kind of goes hand in hand. But, you know, being like, oh, you know, we'll raise money for rape kits by taxing strip clubs is sort of like being like, oh, we'll raise money for streets by taxing DVDs. It doesn't make sense. They're not connected by any means. But, I mean, yeah, this is just awful. This is a way for people to, like with cigarettes or whatever it is, to just put a tax on things that are unpopular. Because they can. Because nobody's going to stand up for strippers or smokers or anything, or porn stars or anybody like that. So it's easy to pass these taxes on unpopular things. But what bothers me most about this is the sexism involved in this. And I know I'm not a guy that goes off on accusations of sexism often. But this is incredibly sexist, I think. I think that, Houston, it's a big city, and I'm sure that they are buying a lot of pepper spray, and I'm sure that they're buying a lot of police cars, and I'm sure they employ a lot of police, and I'm sure they buy a lot of guns and stun guns, and I'm sure that they, do all kinds of things with money. But to say that rape kits are the least priority, and that they need to pass a new tax in order to pay for them, is fucking absurd. Like, I would think that rape kits would be pretty high on the priority list. Ideally, you know, somebody comes in and says, hey, I've been raped. I would think that if I was in charge of the police station, I would go, you know what? I'll maybe stop paying for cable TV here at the police station, and maybe we'll pick up a couple of rape kits to find out, who your attacker was. You know, we can make some cutbacks to find out who's going around raping people, doing the absolute worst thing you can do to another person.
Now, see, this is why we're not cops, though. You and I never went through police academy and had those wacky adventures and training sessions with Michael Winslow or anything like that. And Michael Winslow? No, forget it. Bobcat Goldthwait. Let's do that instead. Yeah, we didn't go to police academy with Bobcat Goldthwait. Yeah, I mean, I think we both logically are approaching this with, like, what is even the connection? Because I don't, I mean, I would like to see research either way about it. And I know it's just a news blurb. Still, it's kind of bizarre because I just don't understand what the connection is.
Yeah.
But when you mention, like, that these people aren't getting rights because they're unpopular, I mean, doesn't that kind of lend credence to why these laws are being passed in a democratic society anyway? I mean, just, it's the majority rule. Like, people have voted and been outspoken about this. They might be misinformed, but it's what's popular, unfortunately. Like, that's the result. It's like, there aren't enough strippers or a stripper support community that's out there voting for stuff against this kind of thing. Or voting against this sort of thing, or protesting it.
Yeah, if we lived in a democracy, but we live in a republic where people are supposed to uphold laws not based on majority rule. And as such, that's why it's such travesty when people go around saying, oh, we can go ahead and tax cigarettes because 60% of people don't smoke and only 40%, well, I think it's like 75 and 25%, whatever the percentage is. More people don't smoke. So it will be super easy for us to get this revenue because everybody's going to vote for it because there are more non-smokers than smokers. It's an easy loophole to get what you want.
Okay, so you're still talking about popularity. Republic or democracy, whatever. It's on this point of people being outspoken about these sort of things, and like, the groups that aren't speaking out are the ones that you're talking about. Like, where are they? Where are they protesting? Where are they getting their voices heard? Because people are still voting on these taxes. It's not like this, you know, factory machine pumping out taxes. People are examining these things and being like, okay, should we put this into effect or not? Where is this funding going to go? How are we going to explain the use of this? And that's all being done. Like,
well, this
where are the strippers? Where are the smokers? When you're talking about the smokers, like, where are they? What are they doing?
This was voted on by a council, not by the people.
Yeah, I know. But the council members just didn't show up. Like, people are voting these people in. And the council members are voting on behalf of the people. So, you might agree with that, you might not, but when it comes to these laws, like...
behalf of the people, they're voting on behalf of how to get free money.
Okay, right. This is where we are disagreeing, though. Like, if that is the case, like, if we're living in that sort of mindset, which just seems completely odd to me, it's like, if anybody was trying to get free money, like, that would be the thing to protest. But outside of Tea Parties, I don't know who's protesting it. But if this is something that's affecting the strip club, why aren't the strippers doing anything about it?
I'm sure they will.
I don't know, man. Have you ever met a stripper?
Yeah, during all that crap where they, completely screwed over the porn stores and the strip clubs in Dayton, or in Ohio, there was tons of protests going on. In Florida, a while back, they made some law that, you know, people can no longer be naked, like you have to wear pasties or something in a strip club, and they protested. I mean, they are protesting, but nobody cares because the general consensus is, oh, they're just the slutty minority. They're just strippers. Who cares?
Yeah, I mean, I think we just gone around in a circle. So, yeah, like, I do agree that this is, like, it doesn't really fit. I mean, I don't understand what the logic is behind enacting a tax on, it seems like unrelated things. Like, I know where they're trying to find a relation or a correlation, but.
Okay, well, we agree that rape is not connected to strip clubs, right?
Right.
So we're both confused as to why they would put a tax on strip clubs to get money for rape kits, right?
Yeah, and I think that's where it ends, basically.
So why aren't they trying to put a tax on soda to get money for rape kits? The answer is because everybody loves soda. Not everybody loves strip clubs. So more people would be upset if they tried to tax soda. That's why they're not doing it. Instead, they're putting a tax on something that nobody cares about, or a very small amount of people care about, because nobody will bitch about it.
Yeah, I'm still in the same mindset. Like, I'm not sure how that changes anything. Like, I honestly don't care. I'm not going to strip clubs, so...
Exactly!
This doesn't affect me.
That's exactly my point! They're not taxing Wes Anderson movies, because people like Frisbee would be upset then. They're taxing things that are the seedy underbelly, that people aren't going to stand up for, because then you have to admit that you enjoy the seedy underbelly. and you have, and you're, you know, a very small minority of people. They're not taxing, you know, Sierra Mist, and they're not taxing Breaking Bad, and they're not taxing, Hondas to pay for rape kits, because that affects more people, and then more people would be upset, and then it wouldn't just be able, you know, they wouldn't be able to just pass it easy peasy and get their money, because more people would be, outraged about the fact that rape kits have nothing to do with Breaking Bad. So why is it being taxed? But because they're trying to tax something that people don't care about, it's easy to do.
Like, I get where you're coming from, but that's about it. Like, I understand where you're coming from, just not seeing you through the entire way. This doesn't, I don't know, man. This,
the bottom line, your the same bottom line you have is the same bottom line that a mom of four who shops at Walmart has, is that they don't go to strip clubs, so they don't care. And that's what the people creating this tax are banking on. That's why they're able to do it. It's because nobody cares. Anyway, to my bigger point, I don't want to talk about these taxes. My bigger point, as I said, was the sexism involved. Would you say that this is sexist? The
tax? No. Like, how is it sexist?
Well, like I said earlier, Mr. Not Paying Attention, police are saying that getting rape kits are their least priority, basically. That, you know, they don't have enough money in their already existing budget to pay for rape kits. And I find that very sexist. I find that, you know, they're basically saying, hey, you know, you get raped, whatever, you know, we don't have the money to pay for finding who did it and arresting them and punishing them. Oh, well, you know.
Well, who are you assuming is getting raped? I mean, men and women can get raped. So you're assuming that's just women? Is that stated here, like it's only women that are getting raped?
What is it? Like, I guarantee you that if it was 100% men getting raped, that the police would, you know, put as much money as possible into finding the person.
Okay, now he's being sexist.
No, I'm telling you, that's how it would go. That's why this is sexist. I'm not, for every, you know, 100 women that are raped, it's one guy that gets raped. And it's neither here nor there. I think that it's sexism built into the system that there's no money for rape kits.
Mm.
And I also find it very sexist that they're putting a tax on the strip clubs, because the people who it will affect are the women who work in strip clubs.
Well, I think we can both agree that's very silly that they're not allotting money for rape kits. Like, that just seems very odd. And this is out of, what, Houston, Texas?
Yep.
So, don't visit Houston, Texas. You might get raped and people might not care that much. Or might not know how to investigate it.
Or might not care to investigate it.
Or might not have a rape kit to investigate it. It's like, we're waiting on another $5 to come in. Last up in the lightning round, Daz Dillinger makes it rain on homeless people. Rap legend Daz Dillinger is taking the phrase, making it rain out in the strip club, and into the streets, showering homeless people with airborne singles.
Yeah,
you find this awesome or demeaning?
I find it funny. And, you know, I mean, I guess on one hand, any way you can get money to homeless people, you know, I guess is pretty cool of you. But, you know, filming yourself making fun of them as you give it to them is kind of shitty. I think this seems to be sort of a trend that I've seen. I mean, don't get me wrong, I hate homeless people as much as the next guy. Just wish them gone. Wish that they would turn into to mailboxes, like in The Simpsons. But, you know, between this story, and I saw this thing on Tumblr where everybody was freaking out at the heroism of this guy, you know, you know, just commending this guy in this video who drove by some homeless people on the street, and he pulled over, and he gets his phone out, and he says, he calls, you know, the place that they're sitting in front of, they were sitting in front of like a Domino's Pizza or something, and, you know, he goes, hey, you know, people in Domino's Pizza, I'm an undercover cop, and, or, you know, I'm a normal cop, I guess, and I've got two undercover cops sitting out in front of your store, and, you know, we're going to be patrolling the area, you know, all day and stuff, and, you know, but we can't blow the cover of these homeless people by, you know, letting them buy food or buying them food, because then people will know that, you know, there's something up here. So can you just go, you know, take a pizza out to them and just sit it down next to them? Don't say anything. Don't blow their cover. Just sit it down and walk back in. And so that was the video. So the people, the Domino's people, pizza people do that. You know, they come outside and they just leave a pizza and walk away. And, you know, everybody on Tumblr was like, oh, you know, how cool, you know, what a great you know, heroic thing to do. And, you know, it would be really heroic treating these people like fucking people and buying a pizza and handing it to them and saying, hey, here's a pizza, man. You know, I hope that it makes your day a little bit better. And, you know, I hope you get a full tummy and you have a good day and, you know, you have a good night's sleep. That would be heroic. Getting these homeless people money by treating them like trash is pretty disingenuous, I think. I mean, to, you know, avoid talk, you know, I mean, getting them the food is cool, but you're treating them like dogs by just setting food down next to them and not talking to them. I mean, it's really kind of sad the way you're going about it.
And by Would you equate that with the same thing that this guy's doing here? Yeah. Daz Dillinger, like, he's basically taking stacks of money. He did this with over $6,000, apparently, and flapping it out, going back to our last story, stripper style. Like, yeah. Onto dudes, like, who are, you know, war vets or simply just homeless, down on their luck, or mentally ill. I mean,
yeah, I mean,
we're both from Dayton. We know the wide range of homeless people that there are.
Well, I've been to Fresno. I know all about the list of homeless people there are.
Ooh. Right. Right.
Yeah, but I mean, yeah, I mean, I think this is kind of the same thing. I mean, at least in the case of this guy, he's, you know, at least going up to them and acknowledging their existence and looking them in the eye while he makes it rain on them. But still, I mean, I, like I said, any way you can help out homeless people, that's cool. You know, I'm not going to be mad for, you know, that you want to help people, but this sort of ironic, detached way of helping, I think, is really shitty. What do you think, Mr. Frisbee?
Well, I totally agree with your sentiment about, you know, genuinely helping people out in a face-to-face manner rather than doing this kind of roundabout way of doing it. Like, I don't know what they would call it, sort of a system hack. What that one guy was doing on, what was it, Tumblr, or you mentioned calling the Domino's pizza, giving a false story to get a free pizza to come out.
Yeah, you can call it a system hack, or you can call it the old school term, a grift.
A grift. The old grift.
It's like a Jim Thompson novel.
But yeah, the Daz Dillinger thing, outside of self-promotion, I'm not sure what this is accomplishing. Like, I don't think it's any better in the sentiment than having a pizza just kind of laid out. It'd be more impressive if, like, if he took a couple of the guys out to a lunch or something, or had them all come, like, into a stretch limo, if that's the idea, like, if he's trying to show wealth while doing this, like, just get him out of the sun for a while. Because this is, it looks like, what is this, California?
Yeah, probably. Yeah, it was Venice Beach, I think.
Yeah, it's terribly hot these days. Like, it's summer months. So, you know, get him out of the sun for a day. It's one day where they're not going to die of exposure or something.
Yeah, buy him a ticket to the water park. Go on the slide with him.
Good. Yeah, if you're going to treat them, don't just throw money at them. Like, this is, I don't know. That seems like the very literal solution to the homeless problem. It's like, just throw money at them. It's like, they kind of need something else, too. Like, depending on the case-to-case basis. Like, it's either, you know, mental health assistance, or a halfway house or something, or reach out to family, whatever. Like, it's people in a bad way.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about it. And just throwing money at a problem never really solves much of anything.
Yeah, this is very metaphorical, that they're literally throwing money at these people. That's funny. But yeah, instead of throwing money at them, just get them a ticket to the water park, go down the lazy river with them, just have a fun time, you know?
Yeah, that sounds really enjoyable, actually. It's like, you all have day passes. Go nuts. Just don't take your shorts off or anything.
Yeah. And I mean, we all remember the classic story of Groundhog Day, where Bill Murray, you know, he helped a homeless guy by feeding him some soup and trying to save his life, you know, and stuff like that. He didn't just throw money at the homeless guy. He had to give them soup. That's how you move on from living living one day of your life over and over again.
Way to bring that back around, by the way. Well, like, that's a really great sequence in that film where he keeps trying to just get that guy to turn his life around in one day. He thinks that's the thing that's going to make him out, like, get him out of this loop that he's experiencing. It's a great sequence.
I agree.
But in the end, it looks like this entire event just became him tossing money into crowds of people. Not just homeless people, but just anybody who was there, tourists, passersby, a la the Joker, played by Jack Nicholson from Tim Burton's 1989 Batman film, when he's in the parade. He's just like throwing money from the float while Prince is playing over the boombox.
Yeah, before he started throwing money at the people, he shouted, "This town needs an enema!"
And then he ejected them all with laughing gas. And he pulled a yard-long revolver from his holster pant.
And 20 years later, he was rebooted by a much better actor.
Surprisingly different take. Yeah.
So we've got a new segment here that we're going to do real quick on this longest show ever. And it's called 50 Shades of Frisbee. What this entails, of course, is Mr. Frisbee here reading a passage from the new hit book, 50 Shades of Grey. I don't know if it's new. The hot hit S&M book, the sexually deviant 50 Shades of Grey. So Mr. Frisbee is now going to read a passage from it.
His pointer finger circled my puckered love cave. "Are you ready for this?" he mewled, smirking at me like a mother hamster about to eat her three-legged young.
And with that, that's the end of the show. I like that new segment. Yeah, that's the end of the show. Go to poolpartyradio.com and find all our episodes. Or go to iTunes and find all our episodes. You can get there from our website or just by searching for us on iTunes. Now if you're using an iPad or an iPod or an iPhone, you might need some new app for the iTunes, but I assume you're probably on top of that, more on top of it than I am, because I don't use my phone to download podcasts. But be mindful of that. Also, if you're going to download some of the old episodes, you should do it now, because every new one we put up, an old episode gets taken off the iTunes feed. They're still all on the website, of course, but no longer on the iTunes feed. I think maybe like the first 10 are gone now. Also, email us, poolpartyradio@gmail.com, and tell us what you think about Prometheus or Bill Murray versus Chevy Chase. Let us know if we should allot any chuckle points to other matchups. I was thinking maybe we could do an Adam Sandler-Steve Martin matchup.
Adam Sandler and Steve Martin?
Yeah. I think I don't know if it was on this show or Junk Food Dinner or something, but I was talking about how Adam Sandler is the new Steve Martin. And so maybe that's a matchup in the making. But yeah, also follow Mr. Frisbee on Twitter, at Jason Frisbee. You can follow me at Parker Arizona, even though I desperately want to change my Twitter name, but I can't. I was going to change it to Ultimate Parker, but that's taken by Spider-Man, which sucks. Because, you know, I'm not from Arizona. Why the hell is that my Twitter name?
Because you fell in love with Arizona for a while.
I do like Arizona. I gotta be moving on. Gotta be finding a new Twitter name. Maybe, Parker Julian Sands.
What if you took his last name as yours, Parker Sands?
That's a pretty good idea.
But both of those just now make me think of Comic Sans font. It's kind of a terrible font.
I don't want that.
No. We don't want you to get beat up. We want you to be admired.
Yeah. Also, like us on Facebook, facebook.com/poolpartyradio.
We want to take this internet love affair to the next level.
That's true. We want everyone to see the cool pictures that Seth Kuzer posts on our Facebook.
They are all incredibly rad.
Man, so great. I love that Jesse Jackson one he just posted.
Yeah, with a goofy lip motion. Like, that seems legit face that he's got going on.
Yeah. So I guess that's everything. In the future, for our Friday the 13th episode coming up next month, Mr. Unstable will be here. He's pretty cool, so that'll be fun. And also, I think we've got a new Saved by the Bell episode coming up, so that will also be fun. Until then, this is Parker Ford, Jason Razorblades Frisbee, saying fuck you, Chelios.
His pointer finger circled my puckered love cave. Are you ready for this? He mewled, smirking at me like a mother hamster about to eat her three-legged young.